Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, bonds. Before I begin that, I do want to go through just a quick look at the markets. Today is actually a dead day. It's President's Day, so I was sitting there waiting for the opening bell. I was ready to attack and do some trading, and 8:30 came, and nothing happened, and then I realized, okay, the markets are closed today. On one hand, I can't show you anything about bulls and bears, but I can use this occasion to do a little bit of showing you some screens, because on the exam, just like on that quiz, let's try this again. We'll have a look at just a couple of screens just to get you some, again, one more attack on what's going on when we look at the screens on stocks. Now, we've had a couple of grim days here, and I'll point out one very grim story. But just to start it off, to look at a screen, looking at Google, that was not a good thing. Which Alphabet, excuse me, Alphabet. Okay, let's try that again. Alphabet. There we go. Now, as you could see, now this was the trading on Friday. It was down for the day, and in the aftermarket, it was down even more. That was reflecting more or less the sentiment of the whole market. If you have a look here at Google, its beta is 1.07, which indicates that it's a little riskier than the market. And although the price-earnings ratio is below 30, so that kind of tells a different story. The full take of this, Google is about market risk, approximately market risk. It's not too risky and it's not too safe. It's right there in the middle. But if you look at it, the average volume was a little stronger on Friday than on the volume on Friday was a little stronger than it usually is. And if we look around here a little bit, you can see, okay, well, it's a very profitable company. Look at that, $112.20 per share profit in the latest reporting period. So that's quite impressive right there. Doesn't pay a dividend, so you're riding that thing. All of your money is on the capital gain. In other words, the stock price increase. And the analyst there at Yahoo is saying this is going to go from 26.09.35. In 1 year, it will be 35.06.11, which would mean that you are getting a 1 year capital gain on this thing of 35.06. 11 divided by 26.09.35 minus 1, and that gives you a 34.37% return for a year. Now, if you look at this, that means that, but there's no dividends, so everything is riding on that stock price going up. Is it going to go up by that much? That would be a pretty nice deal. If you could put money in and earn over 34% in a year, that's awesome. Look at this, though. Now, this is technicians kind of stuff. Let's look at the 1 year on Google. Now, an ELF, that's a technical chartist kind of person, would say, look at those ascending tops. This is over the last year. Do you see the ascending tops and the ascending? But then this last top failed to reach the neckline of those rising tops. That right there was a warning sign that this is not going to work. This company is going to have the stock price slide back down. That, and now we've got declining tops and declining bottoms. That's an indication that if you're a technical analyst kind of person, an elf, you like the charts, you think they tell you something, that would tell you that this is a company you don't want to get involved with for a while. Until it can prove that it can turn those declining tops around and those declining bottoms around, Google isn't a good idea. Now, if you look here at the 52-week range, it has gone over the last 52 weeks from down as low as $2,002.02, clear up to $3,042. So right now, it's sitting just about in the middle of its range over the last 52 weeks. That's not telling you anything good either. This is a company that if I were a betting kind of person, this is not a good idea to go with a company like this. You can find other things that you could go into. You certainly wouldn't want to go into something like Roku, which took an absolute paddling a couple of days ago. Whoops. Look at that. Dropped off the face of the earth kind of drop. And look at that. Beta is stupid high, and the price-earnings ratio is stupid high. This is a risky AF company. This is the kind of company you would want to throw money into if you didn't want to have it back. It's one of those where you take the investment for what it's worth and then just say, okay, I'll put it in a drawer and maybe someday it might be worth something. The only thing that I would argue on this one is that Roku isn't in any bad shape. Look, it has positive earnings. See that? $1.71 a share. Doesn't have a dividend, so you're riding all on capital gains on the stock price going up. But boy, is that scary. Now, they're saying that the Yahoo analysts are saying that it's going to go from $112.46 right now, clear up to $312.64. So this analyst, or whoever it is saying you take 312.46 divided by 112.46 minus 1, and then times it by 100. Analyst is saying 178% capital gain in 1 year. Now, is that going to happen? Well, again, you're talking about predictions by a place called Yahoo, so there's that. Looking at something a little bit kind of interesting, we're on the verge of a war. It might turn into a world war. It's got all the possibility of that. Lockheed Martin. One thing you notice right off the bat, Lockheed Martin is a relatively safe company. Beta is below 1. P/E ratio is a calm 16.98. It's profitable, and it pays a dividend. So are you going to make a fortune off it? Well, Yahoo says it's going to go up to $407.50 in 1 year from its current position at $386.46 minus 1 times 100%. So, wait, I did that wrong. Let's try that again. 407.5 divided by 386.46 minus 1 times 100. So you're going to earn a 5.44% return. Big flip. But this one pays a dividend. So that capital gain yield for the year of 5.44% also gets a dividend yield of 2.90%. So overall, you would earn 8.34%. Well, that's certainly not what you could earn with Roku, but then again, you're not taking the insane risk of Roku either. So you can see that risk-return relationship showing up here. And this is a war stock. War stocks tend, it doesn't just do war, it does a lot of things. But in a time like this, a company like that is going to be profitable because as we expend war materiel in combat, that means that we have to replace it. And that means that the companies that produce it are going to get orders for more of it. So you always keep that in mind, that war has a way of sustaining businesses that are in the business of war. Just something to keep in mind as time goes on. We'll go through another screen or two. I want you to be comfortable because on the midterm, as I said, just like on the quiz, I'll give you a screen and I'll ask you questions about it. Okay, enough of that. Let me take you over here to bonds for a while. Bonds represent debt. Now, again, I'm going to go through the mostly terminology here and the different types of bonds and all of that. There will be one small piece of math in this, but for the exam, just know the terminology. And some of this requires that you use words and terms in ways that you didn't used to use them. So, for example, when you borrow money, you are actually the issuer, the seller of a debt instrument, debt paper, as you hear me call it sometimes. The lender is actually the investor, the purchaser, the holder of the debt. So you go into a, bank and you decide you want to have the big dream mobile home and put it on the south side of Decatur. Good times ahead. Yes. So, I am the banker. You come to me and you say, I should like to sell you a bond. And I say, well, I might be willing to invest in your bond, to buy your bond. So the lender, well, let's start with the borrower. The borrower is the issuer of the debt instrument. The seller of the debt instrument. The writer of the debt instrument. Now that one seems kind of weird. When you come to me, you are actually writing a debt instrument. You say, no, I'm not. The bank wrote it. No, we just prepared it so that it would have all the right terms, but then we hand it to you to sign first, and then we sign it, you being the actual writer of the debt instrument. The lender is the investor. The purchaser, the buyer, the holder, the original holder. Now, that holder might sell it to someone else in the secondary market, but the lender is the original holder of the instrument. Now, that sounds a little bit odd, but we have to think in terms that are technical. Now, another thing about this is the term of the bond. Okay. If it's less than 1 year, it is called a bill. If it is between two and, see, this is where it used to be, we'd say 7 years, but now they called Netflix's 15-year paper notes. And so I'll say, okay, fine, up to 15 years is a note. And then 20 years or more is called a bond. Although we use the term bond kind of generically, whether it's a bill note or bond. So on an exam, I might do something like, or a quiz, I might say, okay, you lent your friend money for 2 weeks. And I say, okay, are you the issuer or the buyer? That's right. No, wait, you lend, so you are the investor. You are the buyer. Well, he's the buyer. You're the investor. And this was a bill, a note, or a bond. You'd say, well, that was a bill because it was only for a couple of weeks. So a mortgage would be a mortgage bond because it's 20, 30 years, something like 25 years. Now, a car loan is actually a note because it's usually for about 5 or 6 years. So I will give you one. I'll describe a scenario, and I'll give you different narratives of what actually happened, and you have to pick out the right one. Just remember, whoever lent the money is the lender, the investor, the purchaser, and all that, and the borrower is the issuer, the seller, or the writer. Let's go do this. Now, let me take you through some terminology here. We can split up bonds in different ways, but one thing that's important is there is consumer debt. Now, I've done some with that, but we'll lay off that. You're going to have a question or two on the exam, like you did on the quiz. Well, you know, what's a payment on a 30-year mortgage? But for the most part, we stay away from those from here on out. There is corporate debt, and there is government debt. The distinction is that with consumer debt, part goes to pay interest, your payment. Part goes to pay interest, and part goes to amortize the loan, pay balance. So we say that it services the debt and it amortizes the debt. Corporate and government debt does not work this way. All that is paid along the way is the interest. And then at the very end, one last interest payment is paid, and then what they borrowed is paid back. Okay. So now let me take you through very quickly. Now we denominate bonds in thousands, multiples of a thousand. So, let's say IBM, 6%, 2040. Some terminology. First of all, the face value is $1,000. Always, no matter what else, it's $1,000. We can quote it as 100. And I'll tell you about that on Wednesday. But it is $1,000. The 2040, that's the date of maturity. That's the year of maturity, when it is paid back. Along the way, all that is paid is interest. First things first, 2040 minus 2022, that's called the term of the bond. In this case, what, 18 years? The term is how much time is left to maturity. The term is 18. Now, the coupon payments, the interest is paid twice a year. So the N on your calculator is always going to be the term times 2. So there would be 36 payments remaining of interest. The face value is always $1,000. Don't forget to put that in there, $1,000. Just put it in. Don't argue about it, just put it in there. The 6%, you take 6% times the face value, and then you divide it by 2, because the $60 will come in 2 $30 payments every year. Now, the book starts out with annual payments. Truth be told, the answers aren't a whole lot different between doing it annually and semi-annually. It's enough to catch you. Now, what I try to do on an exam is I'll make it so that if you did it annually, you'll still probably hit within the range of right answers. It does get to be a lot of money if you're talking about millions and millions of dollars. It gets serious. But for, you know, just a single finance question at FIL 240, it won't make enough of a difference that, like, you might get an answer that's $5 off if you use annual instead of semi-annual payments. But I'll try to make the range large enough that that won't be a problem for you. Okay, so that would be the $30. Now, this $30 will be paid every 6 months until the year 2040. One last $30 payment will come to the holder of the bond, and a $1,000 check will come too. That's how it works. And then you can find what you need. Now, bonds start out with a price of $1,000. But as time goes on, investors are going to compare that 6% coupon to what they are assessing currently that bond should pay. So maybe 10 years ago or whatever, that would have been 6% would have been right. But it might not be. The investors say, yeah, this company's gotten a little riskier lately, so we'd really like to have about 6.5%. That number is called the yield, and it shows up as a mathematical consequence of the price of the bond. See, if the bond should be paying more than it is, then investors are going to sell it, and the price will fall below par. We'll talk about that a little later. But for right now, that is basically the setup. If you can remember it, these problems are just more of those, just do it on the calculator and know which one you're solving for and make sure that you have that bottom toggle on end, because this is a normal kind of thing. And don't ever forget to put in that face value of 1,000. This is different from other bonds that you've seen before. Let me think here. Okay. Bonds come in all kinds of flavors, so. I mean, they're all kinds. Within the corporate and government, corporate bonds come as bills, notes, bonds, and all that. And there are other things about the quality of the bond. It comes from its rating, AAA versus AA. A good example, now, here's how it works. Big corporation, let's say it's Netflix. Netflix, several years ago, wanted to borrow $1.2 billion. So they go to an investment bank and they say, we want to borrow $1.2 billion. So the investment bank and its syndicate go to their big money and they say, okay, Netflix, they want to borrow $1.2 billion. Now, whatever the investors are, there's going to be a discussion. The investment bankers are going to say, what interest rate do you want to make this happen? Well, in that case with Netflix, they said, that's a hell of a lot of money for that company. That's risky, really risky. We're not going to, okay, we'll do it, but we're going to charge a high interest rate for them. But wait a minute. They're not that risky now. Yeah, but after they're exposed to $1.2 billion more in debt, any blip in their revenues, and they're bankrupt, and we have to take over their daggone company. No. So in other words, there is a decision made on the risk of the company and reflecting that in the coupon that the company will pay. In the case of Netflix, the interest rate was high enough that it Netflix, that paper came out as what is impolitely called junk. The more polite term is high yield. But it's basically they were junk bonds. Why? Because Netflix, basically, they don't have a whole lot of room to grow anymore. There's only so many people on Earth who can subscribe to Netflix, unless Netflix starts selling subscriptions to aliens from other galaxies. And there's only so many more of these jackups in their subscription price before people say, no, we're going to go with Disney Plus or Hulu or something else. So Netflix doesn't have a lot of running room right now, and so that was risky. And so the investors are going to want a good high interest rate for taking that risk. So there's that. Now, about that decision, about the investors and the investment bank. The loan will be made on what is called an indenture agreement. I'll go back through this again on Friday. But it's essentially the entire loan agreement. The what ifs, the who ares, wherefores, who farteds, everything is in there, in that indenture agreement, which is the agreement between the bondholders and the company that's borrowing the money, the lenders and the company borrowing the money. It is so detailed, it goes down to the level where there is a bond trustee, a representative of the bondholders, who has power within the corporation then. Oh, we want to take on this project. It's kind of risky, but boy, our shareholders can make a lot of money. No, you're not. That's what the bond trustee might say. No, you're not going to do that. Why not? Because we don't care what your shareholders are going to make. You take risks like that, that puts our coupon payments in at risk. No, you're not. But we're going to give a great dividend. No, you're not. You're not going to put a great dividend out there for them. You keep that money and invest it and put some aside so that you can pay our coupon payments. Oh, you can't do that. Watch us. We've got the indenture agreement and you signed it. You see, that's how I had been teaching this for years. And when I was in New York City, a former student of mine was working at an IB house, an investment banking house, and I said, do you have an indenture agreement? I'd like to see one. I've never actually seen one of these things, because I did stocks and all that. And he gets one for me and shows it to me. My God, the thing was like a book. And it was all this legal terminology and all of these what-ifs and all. It was just an amazingly detailed. And it listed things like the coupon and the term and the length of the bond and how much there was to be borrowed and a sinking fund. A sinking fund is putting money aside every year so that you have the face value when you need it to pay it off. I mean, everything was in there in incredible detail. So there you are. The covenants of the indenture agreement were mind-boggling. And there's some I'll even tell you about that are really important for you to know about and how you find out about those covenants if you decide you're going to invest in bonds. Now, understand that bonds are overall less risky than stocks are because the bondholders get paid first. Shareholders don't get a dime until the debt holders are paid in a timely manner. You got a coupon payment due this month? Well, you don't spend any money on the shareholders until you've paid your bills. Your suppliers, your debt holders, your employees, those are all debt holders, and they have to be paid before a dime gets to that net income line, which is where the shareholders get theirs. So in other words, bondholders are, bonds are generally less risky than stocks. A lot of companies have investment policies that say you can invest our extra money we have in retained earnings, but you cannot invest it in stocks. And if you're going to invest it in bonds, you have to invest in high-quality bonds. So, I mean, it's that serious, this quality issue, this less riskiness. And also, and I mentioned this before, keep in mind the bond market is 10 times the size of the stock market. It is a vast planet-wide ocean of quadrillions of dollars.
flowing around the world at any given time. But you don't hear about that in the financial press. The reason, as I had mentioned before, it's not sexy. It does. Bonds don't whip up and down and wait for the earnings to come out and all this kind of stuff. And boy, the CEO really said something wild on Twitter. It doesn't matter. The bonds are just sitting there, up and down. The only time anyone gets excited about bonds is if a company is getting close to not being able to pay a bond payment. So, for example, a company slogging along like Steak and Shake. It got in the news because there were a lot of analysts like me who weren't sure they were going to be able to meet a coupon payment that was, I think it was a coupon payment that was coming due last year. If they don't make it, the bondholders are going to shut them down, just turn off the corporation, take them to bankruptcy. Somehow, and I don't know how it happened, I didn't follow the story, Steak and Shake managed to get the money together to make the payment. But still, that's about the biggest excitement you get is the occasional story like that. Now, you can split bonds up all kinds of ways. Mortgage bonds versus debentures. Now, a mortgage bond is a bond that's backed by something. Like, this company issued a 20-year, $10 million bond backed by its factory in Poughkeepsie. That would be a mortgage bond, because if the company goes to Tap City, those bondholders get that factory, and they liquidate it. Debentures are on, like mortgage on a home or a car. A car is a mortgage bond. A car actually is a mortgage note. A debenture, you're just hanging. Like credit cards are debentures. You can get a loan at a bank for a vacation. That would probably be a debenture unless they wanted you to take out a second mortgage to do it. So there's those. And there's other kinds of bonds too. Excuse me. But one thing to keep in mind, okay, corporate and government. Corporate comes in all manners of flavors. There's even a kind of corporate debt where very large credit-worthy corporations borrow money for a very short period of time, like 30 days. Some big, huge corporation says, well, we need money for 30 days. If you give us $9,990,000, in 30 days, we'll give you back $10 million. That's called commercial paper. It's a huge, I mean, I didn't really even grasp how big it was until about 20 years ago when there was a big, no one expects commercial paper to go off the rails, and it did once with a company called Enron. But a lot of times, a company will get in a check for $2 million, and it doesn't have to pay the money to anyone for like 20 days. What they'll do is they'll just quickly go and grab some commercial paper, and then they'll sell it back out in 20 days, so someone will have it for 10 days to cash in. But it's just a quick, dirty investment. And in fact, a lot of sweep accounts use it. And I'll explain sweeps later. Even your money, you might not know it. Your money might be going into that kind of paper. Now, there are corporate bonds that are 30-day, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever. And then there's 20-year, 30-year. There's even 50. 100, 200-year paper out there. Now, why would anyone invest in 100-year paper or 200-year paper? Because you're going to get interest payments all those years, twice a year, but you're going to be long dead before that thing pays off the face value. You put $100 million into commercial, or rather into long paper, super long paper. say 200 years. Why would anyone do that? Well, that's life insurance companies, property and casualty. Well, it's definitely property and casualty companies. Because some of the risks that they cover happen very rarely over centuries. But when they happen, they are staggering in their loss. So a property and casualty company, say in this part of the country, it might not need to, it might put money aside that it would need in a couple of centuries. Give you, right here in this part of the country, there is a fault line. It is a gorgeous, ancient fault line. It's called New Madrid. It's east of here. To give you an idea, I think it's east of here. It's to give you an idea of how horrible that thing is, the last time it broke was in the early 1800s. The stories about what it did were, it was like the letters that came from people in the area. They were like reading science fiction of an apocalypse. One major earthquake after another, fires, complete rubble of St. Louis. And I mean, it was so powerful that it actually lifted the Mississippi River through the water back north, and then it came back down south as a tsunami. It was that bad. And then some of the early explorers were documented, chronicled legends of the Native Americans of the area that there had been another one of these sometime in the 1500s or 1600s. So in other words, New Madrid doesn't uncork but once every few centuries. But man, when that thing does, goodbye Chicago the next time. And all the pipelines that crisscross the country with gas and oil, poof, burn, cook, roast. And yeah, it's so in other words, companies that don't want their money back for a long time invest in long-term debt. Corporate. And of course, there are different grades of this too. AAA, AA, I'll talk about those on Wednesday, the different rating services and all that. But going on from there, and then there's some nasty little tricks in corporate debt that you need to keep an eye on. If you're going to buy corporate debt, it's a great way to have really safe, long-term investments. It's the kind of thing like you've got a couple, they've reached about 70, they've got $10 million, and they want some place where they can get fixed income. Debt is excellent, high-grade debt, because then they'll get a coupon payment every year for the rest of their lives, and they'll probably pass on before the debt matures so they can bequeath it in estate and all that kind of good stuff. Government debt. There are several different kinds. There are treasuries. That's treasury debt. Now, treasury debt, of course, comes in bills, notes, bonds. And it literally used to be, well, it still is, an auction. But back in the day, there was literally paper on the table. Bills over here, notes here, bonds here, and investors came in and they bought them. In other words, the investors were lending our government, and they still do. They lend our government money because we don't have high enough taxes to compensate for all of our spending on social programs, on wars, on everything that we do as a government. So we need to borrow every year, more and more and more. Who's lending us that money? Well, the biggest lenders are giant governments like China. They have trillions and trillions of American dollars. How did they get them? Because we bought their cheap toasters. And so we get a toaster, they get American dollars, and then they lend them back to us. And then we owe those to them more and more and more every year. The Chinese, the Saudis, the Canadians, all of these people take care of our sorry asses because we can't live within our means. We piss ourselves raw when we have taxes that are high, and then we piss ourselves raw when we don't have another social program, and we piss ourselves raw when our bridges fall down. Yeah, we need money more than we can afford. because hell, that's just us. Treasury. Now, there's also, interestingly enough, there's not just the U.S. Treasury borrows, but there's agency debt, too, that borrows separately from the Treasury. And there are all these agencies, like the Tennessee Valley Authority issues its own debt, and other agencies issue their own debt. So that national debt that we see, most of the time that's not reporting all the agency debt that is also being borrowed. Now, there are always lenders, buyers of the paper. That's just, you know, because it's good stuff. Now, there's also the other side, generally, generically referred to as municipals, munis, municipal debt. Everything from bonds for cities, for streets, roads, sewers, water, school district bonds to build a new high school, all that kind of stuff, or a grade school. That's muni debt. Now for the last part of this. Most bonds do this coupon thing. But there is a kind of debt, government debt, and I actually just described one in commercial paper. It's called discount paper. Discount paper works like this. You buy the debt, and then you get a little more money back when it matures. So you would lend the government $975, and in 1 year, you would get back $1,000. That's called a discount bill. To take you on a journey, we're going to go to an auction at the Treasury of a Treasury bill. Price, future value, amount of interest earned, and yield. So the auction is going to be just commercial, 1 year discount T-bills. And we're going to do it like this. You, sir, have just come into the auction room. The paper's on the table, and I am the auction hostess. My name is Mabel. Well, hello there, young man. Are you here for your first auction? Well, that is just wonderful. My goodness, you're so good as an investor. I can tell it right now, and you're a handsome young man. My God, you're handsome. And we put the paper on the table here, and you want one of these T-bills, don't you? Well, they're going at $975 right now, and you can have one. Remember, in 1 year, you'll get $1,000 back. Is this what you want? Well, of course it is. Earl! One-year T-bill, $975, drag it through the garden. Price, $975. What's the face value? What's the face value always? $1,000. So in this case, you are going to earn $25 on an investment of $975. Be sure that you put in the denominator the price. Don't put in 1,000, put in the price. And if you work that out, that'll be 2.56%. One year later, here you come into the auction room again. Well, there you are. You got your $1,000 back, and now you're ready to buy again, aren't you? Well, you are an astute investor. We just love people like you. We have these T-bills on the table, and of course, you want to pay $975 for this, and you say, no, you wait, you cow. I don't see anyone else buying paper in here. I don't think I'm going to pay $975. I'm going to pay $950. Earl! One-year T-bill, $950. So this time you earn $50 on an investment of $950 for a yield of 5.26%. Now tell me, sir, what happens when the price goes down? What happens to the yield? Well, butter my biscuits and call me delicious. The price and the yield are inversely related. This is one of the most fundamental principles of mathematical finance. Price and yield are always inversely related. The lower the price, the higher the yield. Remember how I've been talking about that? Well, the yields went down today, so the prices went up. That's the principle right there. If you can do one of these on the test, and I'll just get, it'll be just as simple. Price, what's the yield? One-year yield on a, what's the yield on a one-year T-bill if you buy it for this at the auction? If you can answer the yield, you got one of the questions on the test. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.